That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to the Tech Meme Ride Home for Monday, May 27th, 2019. I'm Brian McCullough. Hope those of you that have one are enjoying your long weekend. As promised, here's a sort of special bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. Nerds and tech folk have always had a special fascination with typeface and font design, and especially with the venerable Helvetica. Today we're going to talk to Charles Nix, whose foundry, Monotype, had the challenge of updating Helvetica for the 21st century with Helvetica Now. A lot of these bonus episodes are you learning along with me as we take deeper dives into certain tech topics. Well, look, no more so than this episode, because I knew absolutely nothing about this area of design going into it, so I was fascinated to learn about what goes into creating a typeface from an artistic, design, and even business perspective. And if you want to see for yourself what we're talking about here, hit up the link at the bottom of the show notes to see what Helvetica Now looks like. So as I sort of said off air, I feel like type is some sort of weird hobby or obsession for tech folk, and I'm no different. I've seen the Helvetica documentary and things like that, and I feel like Helvetica is the most famous font in the world, but at the same time, I don't really know anything about anything, and maybe some people listening don't as well. So could we just start by you giving us maybe a little history and background on, you know, where Helvetica came from and how it became so ubiquitous in the world?
Sure. So if you really want to nerd out, then this is exactly where we need to begin.
Please
the
do.
Nerdiest of nerds, yeah. Talking about the nerdiest of topics. So Helvetica is the sort of the end product of an evolution of sans serif typefaces, and those are typefaces without feet. So the first 300 years of typography, from the middle of the 1400s to the middle of the 1900s, was all about type with serifs on it. At the end of the 19th century, experiments in sans serif typefaces began in earnest. There were like little offshoots all along the 19th century way, but at the end of the 19th century, people started to take them seriously as a possibility for advertising generally. And they were called grotesques at the time, which, I mean, the origin of that word in describing sans serifs is a little bit long and storied and probably beyond the ken of what we're going to talk about here. Mm-hmm. So suffice it to say, at the end of the 19th century, these sans serif typefaces started to develop. But one in particular, a family that sort of evolved over the first 50 years of the 20th century, was Axenden's grotesque. And because it was based on the sort of 19th century idea of what skeletal forms for letters should look like, it had some idiosyncrasy to it. And so two designers, actually one designer and one type director at a small foundry in Switzerland called Haas, came up with this idea of creating a new grotesque. A typeface that sort of ironed out a lot of the idiosyncrasies of the earlier sans serifs, like Axenden's grotesque. And that typeface was called Neue Haas Grotesque. They named it after their foundry, and it was a foundry typeface from their foundry, so they called it Neue Haas Grotesque. And it was available for hand typesetting, so one character at a time. And this was in 1957. They knew, though, that if they wanted it to really take off, that they had to partner with a machine typesetting company. So up north in Germany, there was a company called Stempel, which manufactured typefaces for the Linotype machine, which was the leading heavy-duty industrial typesetting machine of the time. So they partnered with Stempel to create a machine version of of Neue Haus Grotesk. And Stempel said, that's fine, we want to do this, but we need to change the name to something that sort of indicates where it's coming from. It is a little more salesy. So they named it Helvetica, or renamed it Helvetica. And for the first 2 years of that partnership, both names were used interchangeably, but eventually Helvetica became the name of the typeface. And it refers specifically to Switzerland.
It right, means, the old Latin you know, the name
Swiss,
or something.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that was the beginning of the beginning. But the transition from hand setting to machine setting meant that they had to change the typeface slightly. So change the set widths of the characters, the space on either side of the characters, and also, in some cases, the width of some characters in order to make it work in that machine environment. And so began the discrepancy between Neue Haus Grotesk and Helvetica. So nonetheless, Helvetica became an incredibly popular typeface over the next 30 to 35 years. It managed to make its way into every new type technology. So as we segued from metal typesetting into photo typesetting and then eventually photo typesetting into digital typesetting, Helvetica was always there, incredibly popular and incredibly useful and ubiquitous. So that popularity sort of was about to get supercharged. In 1982, slightly before 1982, when PostScript was beginning to be used to describe pages and to be used to describe graphic shapes, Helvetica was redesigned for use in PostScript and christened Neue Helvetica. So it was a major breakthrough because you know what was right around the corner from 1982, and it was that Helvetica would be on every computer and every printer that shipped for the next 30 years. And that made it not only popular with designers and printers, but popular with everyone. Because we all suddenly had access to Helvetica.
Well, and I would say for our purposes, really especially popular with technology companies.
Right. Precisely. Yeah, they needed a sans serif. Helvetica was the sans serif. And so it became just insanely popular, but that transition from early digital into PostScript was rudimentary. And one of the things we did with Helvetica now, which I'll sort of get into, was fix one of the problems that developed at that juncture. The main problem as I see it is highly nerdy, but the main problem as I see it in that transition is that the digitization that took place in 1982 was done from one master drawing. And that master drawing was for a type that was meant to be used at 12 point, 10 to 12 point. So text sizes. So when you blow it up, it looks like a type for text that's been blown up. And when you shrink it down, it looks like a type for text that's been shrunk down. So it carries the sort of, subtle, the distinction between those three sort of ranges of type, but they were something that was really inherent in the typeface at the very beginning when it was in metal, but that got stripped out of it as it turned digital.
Well,
so we've reintroduced that.
Yes, actually, before we get into this proper, let me circle back real quick. So you're with a foundry called Monotype, which is like 120 years old or something like that?
Yeah, the origins of Monotype are in the 19th century.
Wow.
We're a descendant of that tradition, and those were two competing technologies, linotype and monotype, in the 19th century.
Okay.
But in terms of digital, we are both monotype and linotype, but under the monotype moniker.
Well, as you've already
sorry, that's a little convoluted.
No. This is what I'm looking for. But so I just laying that groundwork. As you've already mentioned, you guys recently released Helvetica Now, so a new version of Helvetica. And you've already talked about why you thought it needed to be redesigned. But first, like, is there a little bit of hubris there to like, okay, now it's time to update the most popular font in the world, and we're the people to do it? Like, how did you guys decide to take on this task?
Well, I mean, as I sort of mentioned in passing there, Linotype library, which was the library that that controlled Helvetica before it merged with Monotype, is now part of Monotype. So, we're stewards of Helvetica. It's incumbent upon us to sort of bring to market the best Helvetica that can be. So, up to this point, it's been Neue Helvetica, but yeah, was it hubris? There is some, but there's also the realization that it's our duty to fix things about it that are not quite working for 21st century designers.
Okay, well, tell me what those are, actually. That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah. So the first thing was that single master problem that I talked about. That for hardcore typographers is a big deal, because I mean, if we split up the master drawings into three separate segments like we have with Helvetica Now, then you're able to refine the spacing and make it more stylish at larger sizes, and you're able to refine the spacing in order to make it more legible at really small sizes. So we've divided it into three separate masters: a micro master, a text master, and a display master. And we designed those specifically for the sizes they're intended to be used at. So at smaller sizes, the smallest sizes, the micro has really open spacing. The interiors, the letter forms are a little more open. The X height is larger. That's the height of the lowercase x, which sort of lends the visual size to the type. So by increasing the X height, the type appears to be larger even at smaller sizes. And then increasing the stroke weight so that as the type gets smaller, it still remains substantial enough to be read. So, and those are that's the first thing, like just getting those size masters back into the typeface, the things that were stripped out 35 years ago or now close to 40 years ago. The next thing is that we increased the number of weights. So we added a hairline for the display and an extra black for the display. And we also augmented the weights on the other two masters so that they have more extensive weight choices also. Those are some big broad stroke things that we felt were necessary. There are some really tragic things to bring it right back home and to bring it, sort of to a tech meme listener. The thing that is probably most important is that the at sign, which in 1982 meant at, but in 2019 is everywhere. It's, every one of us own an at sign, and it shows up in our daily reading in a way that we couldn't have predicted in 1982. Or we could have predicted, three people could have predicted. But the at sign design in Helvetica was pathetic. I mean, it was a sad thing, a travesty, especially for something that's being seen so often. So just as Hendrik Weber, who championed the redesign early on, said, just for the at sign, it's worth doing. But we improved a lot of other characters also. There are a lot of currency symbols that didn't exist in the original design that were either not in the design or were added as the years went by. So we redesigned those wholesale so that they fit more with the ethos of the typeface. And then there were these characters, alternate characters, that were sort of incorporated and then deaccessioned as the type evolved over its first 60 years. And we've reinstituted a number of those, and those give the typeface more range. So it can, I mean, they modulate the feeling of the typeface in a way that makes it, in some instances, a very different typeface. The same bones and the same DNA, but able to speak in a slightly modulated way. So those are the big things. it's a lot. I'm sorry.
With everybody fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business with powerful tools like email and SMS marketing, social media posting, and even events management. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. Don't know much about marketing? No sweat. Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. Plus, you can send with confidence knowing your emails are actually reaching your customers thanks to Constant Contact's best-in-class 97% deliverability rate. I use this, and you should too. Tackle any challenge with Constant Contact's expert live customer support. Plus, everything's backed by their 30-day money-back guarantee, so get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Well, no.
What
I'm imagining, you know, part of the process is like the whole story of Helvetica is almost about the impact that technology has had, you know, either on the font or what the font has had, the impact of the font has had on technology. So, like, how much of that went into your thinking in terms of, like, you know, is it possible to, like, future-proof a font design when you have no idea what the use cases would be? Like, again, 30 years ago, no one could imagine, you know, reading on tiny little smartphone screens and things like that.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not possible. Things will change, you know, that we can count on that. They'll change pretty dramatically in the next 10 to 15 years. And with the six decades that it's been around already, Helvetica has sort of proven itself sturdy enough to withstand a lot of change. But there were certain things like, you know, that screens would be the prevalent means of reading most of our text. Or that's redundant, but that was not sort of wasn't in the water in the 80s. And now you sort of, in the way that, you know, web designers think mobile first, we have to think screen first in type design at this point. It used to be that we designed typefaces for print, but now, and then it bifurcated. So you had to pay attention to what was happening on screen, but it wasn't the primary thing. And now I think, In a really substantial way, we think screen first with type.
And sorry, go ahead.
No, so I mean, in as much as the typeface never sort of looked at Helvetica as a typeface, never looked at itself as a screen first entity. Now it definitely is.
And is there, you know? How much thinking, as much as, you know, obviously, as you said, you can't future-proof for things, but, like, how much were you designing for the now in the sense of, well, there could be smart watch faces that we have to think about. There could be, you know, 8K billboard ads in Times Square, you know, that are, you know, 100 feet tall or something. Like, how much were you trying to design for the immediate now that you could plan for?
In a, I mean, a fairly major way. So, I mean, one of the sort of tech things with typefaces that's right on the horizon, that's sort of almost ready for prime time, is a format for type called OpenType Variations. And it exists, and some people use it, but it's not been wholesale adopted yet. It has browser support. But the sort of sales channels and pricing, a lot of things about it still haven't been solidified. But we're designing all of our type now with the idea that it will eventually be available in this variations format. And what a variations format does is sort of it jettisons the idea of buying a typeface by weight. So you would never buy Helvetica Light or Helvetica Bold with a variations typeface. You would buy Helvetica, and then you would tell the typeface what weight you wanted it to be. So it's incredible flexibility for users of type and for people who program with type. So changing weights based on CSS coding, conditional CSS coding, like allowing a typeface to become bolder on its own when it realizes that it's being used at a very small size. So we've designed Helvetica now with the idea that it will eventually become a variations font. So all of the structure's there for it to happen. And it's a very powerful variations font because it's a typeface that will know how big it is, and it will know what weight it is, and it will eventually know what width it is. So there'll be a compressed and extended access to the typeface also. So when I say a typeface knows what it is, it just sort of knows the typeface has a lot of potential built into it that it's not quite realizing yet. Still an incredibly useful typeface, but it will become incredibly more useful once it becomes a variations font.
So that buys it some lifetime. You maybe can get 20 or 30 years out of Helvetica now before you have to do Helvetica now, maybe. My final question, I'm super curious about process and things like this, because we're always talking about, like, you know, businesses and teams and, like, what is the actual process of redesigning a typeface in the sense that, like, how big is the team of people involved? How many prototypes? How many years of work? How many do you do focus groups? Like, what? Just give me a pencil sketch idea of what the process is for doing something like this.
Well, sort of yes to all of those things. So there are probably in the tech aspect of this typeface, from designer. When I say tech, I mean studio. We're all using technology within the Monotype Studio, but within our Monotype Studio, which is about 60 people, about half of the people in the studio worked on Helvetica Now in some shape or form. About six of those were designers who were directly touching the outlines of the letters, and the rest of them are people who make the work that we do as designers work. So it's a lot of back-end coding and testing and proofing that just makes the work that comes out of Monotype Studio really, you know, really great and bulletproof. So that's the size of the team. The process is really long, but the actual design part of it is probably a quarter of that. So in 2014, a small group of people within the studio got together and started theorizing about what a new version of Helvetica would look like, what it needed to be, like what improvements would be made in terms of optical sizes, in terms of alternate characters, in terms of additional characters that weren't around in 1982, et cetera. So they put together a document that sort of guided the process of the redesign over the next 4 years. And then the next 4 years involved a lot of prototypes and discussions and proofs and more discussion to make sure that before we embarked on this wholesale that we were on the right track. And then the team of actual designers was assembled. That's when I was tapped to be part of it. And that was a year and a half ago. And so then there was a year of really intense working that was front-end loaded with a lot of research, looking back at previous printings, previous versions of Helvetica and all of its different technologies, ascertaining the things about those different versions that were worth preserving, the things that we wanted to correct, and then the work, like the drive across country, like the 3,000-mile journey, just get to work, like make it. But yeah, there are so many prototypes, especially for the smaller stuff and the larger stuff. I mean, the text we all feel very comfortable with because we've been looking at it for a long time. But the display stuff had to be proofed at really large scale to make sure that, like you said, when somebody's using it, you know, 20 feet tall on a billboard in Times Square that's, you know, projected from the back or, you know, LED or whatever, that it looks perfect, that nothing about those outlines is causes anyone to question what the typeface looks like. It looks better than Helvetica has ever looked. And then at the smaller sizes, almost the exact opposite has to happen. At the micro sizes, the typeface has to give the impression that it's Helvetica, but it has to be able to stand up to really sort of rigorous conditions. So there are letter forms in Helvetica micro that look strange when you view them at very large sizes, but when you're looking at them at 4-point or 5-point or 6-point or their equivalent in pixels, they look like Helvetica, but much more legible. So there was a lot of proofing and prototyping, and you know, both in print and on screen, or I should say on screen and in print, in order to make sure all of the letter forms work. And then all of our work gets handed over to another team that sort of runs it through its paces. They question everything that we did. I mean, we're all on the same team, but it's, you know, it's QE and proofing and finishing that makes the typeface actually function as well as it does.
All right, seriously, last question. What's been the response to Helvetica New so far?
Well, Helvetica Now.
Helvetica Now. I apologize. Yeah.
Noia was new. Now is now.
Yes.
The response has been, I think we all sort of steeled ourselves very early on for the idea that Helvetica is a sort of lightning rod for people who are super fans and for people who just, you know, hate it because it's the popular thing. So, I mean, I've been surprised by the sort of overwhelmingly positive response to it, just because I had prepared myself for a bunch of Helvetica haters to sort of surface and kick rocks. Yeah, I mean, those people still get to me, obviously, but ultimately, it's been incredibly well received. It's selling well, and we're seeing it in use already, so it's great.